Needham's new memoir is called Stuntman. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Time is 11 o'clock, 81 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Our country is so divided these days, things that used to be routine have become contentious and difficult. For example, it used to be that if the president wanted to deliver a speech to Congress, he walked over, cleared his throat, and did it. Now it's all a negotiation. The House of Representatives agreed to host the president, but only if he agreed to occasionally pause and shout, "You lie," at himself. We'll ask what the real issue was, and Carl gets particularly excited about this week's guest, former White House economic advisor Austin Goolsbee.
There's going to be a lot of probing, a lot of feeling, and touching.
Get yourself some comfortable clothes. Our quiz begins right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nancy Lyons. In the Libyan town of Bani Walid, rebel forces are poised to attack, but they are hoping to seize the town without resorting to hostilities. Bani Walid is one of Muammar Gaddafi's last strongholds. NPR's Jason Bobian reports rebel leaders are trying to work out a settlement.
Negotiations are going on right now. They're just sitting in the shade by the side of this concrete building. They're trying to work out a negotiated settlement. You know, one man just told us that his family's in there, his brother's in there. They don't want to go in there and fight. They want to be able to raise the rebel flag peacefully and hope that the town will surrender and this can be settled through negotiations.
NPR's Jason Bobian reporting from just outside Bani Walid. Tropical Storm Lee is dumping lots of rain on parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama today. NPR's Allison Keyes tells us there's been a lot of flooding as a result.
Forecasters say Tropical Storm Lee isn't strong with sustained winds around 45 miles an hour, but National Weather Service meteorologist Corey Pieper says the slow-moving storm is carrying a lot of rain, which has been pelting an area from Louisiana all the way through the panhandle of Florida.
There's a large area of more than 8 inches of rain that's fallen over, especially portions of southeast Louisiana and through Mississippi, with isolated areas with 12 to 14 inches.
He says there are also some storm surge issues of up to 3 to 5 feet along the Louisiana and Mississippi coast. New Orleans, which is weathering a major test of its flood defenses, is under a flash flood watch through Monday. There have been reports of power outages in the city, and there have been evacuations in some coastal communities. Allison Keyes, NPR News.
Labor this Labor Day weekend holds special meaning for New Yorkers who are digging out from Irene. NPR's Margot Adler reports New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has announced a Labor for Your Neighbor initiative encouraging New Yorkers to help people upstate.
Governor Cuomo says he will pitch in himself during the Labor Day weekend to help clean upstate New York homes of muck and debris from the hurricane. He says Walmart, Home Depot, and other stores are donating mops, buckets, and other materials. There's a new website to help organize these efforts and give out information, and he is urging people in the state who can't participate to send money to a United Way disaster fund set up for upstate victims of Irene. Margot Adler, NPR News, New York.
President Obama is touring Paterson, New Jersey today, seeing the damage from Irene. The once booming factory town of 150,000 was turned into a watery mess last weekend when torrential rains from the storm flooded the Passaic River. Mr. Obama will be led on his tour by New Jersey's Republican Governor Chris Christie, who has nothing but praise for the administration's handling of Hurricane Irene. Residents of Vermont are still cleaning up after Irene and being warned more flooding is on the way. The National Weather Service says 1 to 3 inches of rain is expected. This is NPR News. The head of the International Red Cross is in Syria to address issues concerning the care of those who've been wounded during the government's crackdown on a 5-month-old uprising. Residents and activists say Syrian security forces killed at least 8 civilians today in raids on a rural town. They say authorities apparently believed a judge was hiding in the countryside surrounding the town. After 3 months of fighting sexual assault charges in the U.S., former International Monetary Fund chief Dominique Strauss-Kahn is back in France. Eleanor Beardsley reports, although the charges were dropped in New York, France is still rattled by the scandal.
French television showed Strauss-Kahn and his wife Anne Sinclair met by a throng of journalists at the airport. The couple was later shown smiling in the courtyard of their luxurious Paris apartment. Though sexual assault charges in the U.S. have been dropped, Strauss-Kahn still faces a civil suit from his New York accuser. The former French political star also faces possible charges of attempted rape brought by a young French woman. Though Strauss-Kahn's presidential ambitions have been ruined by the three-month saga, many of his friends spoke in support of him. But the affair has clearly taken its toll on the French people. A recent poll shows that 53% of the French said they do not want to see Strauss-Kahn return to politics in any capacity. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley.
U.S. officials are reportedly issuing an ultimatum to Switzerland to hand over details on the number of Americans who use Swiss banks to cheat on their taxes. A Zurich Weekly says U.S. officials set a deadline in a letter sent to a senior Swiss diplomat last week. The U.S. is reportedly threatening to bring charges against one or more Swiss banks unless the information is shared. I'm Nancy Lyons, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Tennis Channel, with live coverage of the 2011 U.S. Open tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern. Complete schedule is available at tennischannel.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, isn't August supposed to be a slow news month? Not this time. Over the last 2 weeks, Muammar Gaddafi vanished. Dick Cheney came back. And Albany, New York is now beachfront property. How did this happen? Well, we promise to keep things comfortably dull for the next hour. Give you a respite. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there, this is Julia Kerrigan from Clemson, South Carolina.
Hey, how are things in South Carolina?
They're good, very hot.
Yeah, well, it's been that way everywhere. What do you do there?
I'm a professor of mycology at Clemson University.
You're a professor of mycology?
Yes, that's the study of fungi.
The study of fungi, yes, of course.
I get that a lot.
I knew that.
I thought it was a study of people named Michael.
And do you have a particular fungi that you enjoy particularly?
I study all sorts of different types, but I want to tell you, I actually discovered a new species of fungus while I was listening to NPR a while back.
Yeah?
Is that an endorsement?
Wait a minute, you were listening to NPR and you just happened to discover?
I did, I was procrastinating, I was looking through the microscope and there was something good on NPR, and while I was procrastinating listening to the radio, I discovered that this weird fungus I'd never seen and it ended up being a new species.
Oh, please.
Whoa.
Yes.
Please tell me you named it for Susan Stamberg.
I named it Mucatilis, which means living among slime.
Oh.
Please
so
don't tell Susan Stamberg I suggested that. Well, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian and a winner of Last Comic Standing, Mr. Alonzo Bowden.
Hello.
Next is the woman who gives advice to people who ask Amy. She's also the author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson. Finally, and finally, a bon vivant and a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hi there.
So, Julia, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carol this time. Carol Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Of course, your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carol's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to go?
I'll do my best.
Yes, you will. Here is your first quote.
There's going to be a lot of probing and a lot of feeling and touching.
That was the new front runner for the Republican nomination for president. Talking about the vetting process going forward. He was pressing the flesh in Iowa at the time. Who is it?
Oh, gosh, in Iowa. I was going to say John Huntsman, but...
No, he's not the front runner.
No, he's not.
This guy jumped in and went right to the head of the polls right
Mitt
now.
Romney?
I was about to say, Mitt Romney doesn't talk like that, but he might have started since we started the show. You never know with him.
Rick Perry?
Rick Perry, yes, very good. Rick Perry is just looking for. Who is Rick Perry? Well, he's a conservative evangelical governor of Texas who used to be a cheerleader in college. He's George Bush in a more user-friendly package. Think of him as Bush Vista. Or since he's better looking than George Bush, maybe it's the political equivalent of replacing Charlie Sheen with Ashton Kutcher in the same role.
So when Perry's going to do the probing and picking and touching and feeling, is there any shooting involved? He seems to like that a lot.
He does. There was a story in which he went jogging and he came across a coyote and he shot it. Because who among us does not go for a nice 4-mile run with a handgun?
Kind of ruins the line of my jogging shorts.
It does.
There.
Perry's
probing and picking and touching and feeling is incidentally the name of my failed R&B album.
So as you gather from that quote, Perry keeps saying these things that are kind of strange. He actually once compared his own brain to, quote, chicken pot pie, unquote. All kinds of things just in there mixed up with gravy. It's sort of a mixture of carrots, peas, creationism, and the occasional urge to secede from the Union. Now, that sort of talk might disqualify him in a normal year, but right now he's just the sane alternative to Michelle Bachmann. People think he might win the nomination, Perry.
I think he's got a great chance at it.
But maybe, so who would he run with? Like, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's, like...
Well, any woman that will allow him to do some probing, picking.
Exactly.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
You can't hold a speech in the parking lot.
That was an anonymous White House staffer complaining about the trouble they had trying to schedule what with the Speaker of the House?
Obama's speech.
Yes, the President job speech next week. Now, this is what actually happened. The White House calls over to the office of the Speaker of their House, and they say, hey, the President wants to address Congress next Wednesday. The Speaker's office doesn't object. The White House makes its request public. Then the Speaker, for the first time in history, said no to a presidential request to do a speech, said, we want you to do it the next day. The White House is like, but we told you the date. You didn't say anything. And the Speaker's office says, yeah, and among the things we didn't say was yes.
Ooh.
That's what actually happened. We should stress, by the way, that this was between the President and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, not two 12-year-old girls arguing over who gets to marry which Jonas brother.
Well, the whole thing was about the Republican candidate's debate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what happened was that the President's choice Wednesday was the night of a Republican candidate's debate, and the Republicans resented him trying to muscle in their ratings. And so they got their way. Next up, they have to get rid of the other possible competitors, get them off the air that night. That will include that evening's episode of Toddlers with Tierras, the broadcast of the local school board meeting, and a test pattern on Channel 629. All right, Julia, here is your last quote.
I bought goldfish and crackers, cookies, Malamars, things like Little Debbie, just the worst.
That was a Washington, D.C. resident cataloging for Reuters all the emergency junk food she bought in anticipation of what?
Hurricane Irene?
Hurricane Irene, exactly, yes. So people stocked up on all that horrible food, and the problem is now they're stuck with it, and they're gorging themselves. I mean, come on, if you practically clawed the eyes out of the woman at Target to get the last tub of red Twizzlers midnight on Friday, you're not going to let it go to waste, right? But here's an upside to Irene. It turns out that a hurricane creates the perfect wet conditions for growing psychedelic mushrooms. So if you see, say, police cruisers floating down Main Street with sheep on the roof, there may be another explanation. There's water everywhere. The floods, in fact, mainly in New England and elsewhere on the East Coast, they've caused people to hike our slacks up to our navels. We've been starting driving 20 miles an hour to get through the water, and we spend all day watching the Weather Channel. So Hurricane Irene turned us into our parents.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing.
First storm ever with an elastic waistband.
Yeah. I believe that the hurricane itself came up with its left blinker on the whole way.
Right.
So, Alonzo and Adam, you guys live in L.A. Did you follow the hurricane from out there?
A hurricane? Was there some sort of storm on the East Coast?
Yes.
Adam.
It must have been a local thing.
Yeah, no, they get rain. It was. We were still laughing at their little earthquake.
Right.
How cute was that?
That was adorable.
Wasn't that something?
Yeah.
It stirred the coffee and
exactly.
A piece of lawn furniture fell.
All the way over. All the way over.
Carl, how did Julia do in our quiz?
She was perfect, Peter. Julia, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Yay, thank you so much.
Well done. Thank you for playing.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, last week Mitt Romney came under attack because he announced plans in the middle of a recession to quadruple the size of his multi-million-dollar California vacation home. This week, the Romney camp denied those reports. They said that he's really just doing what?
Doubling it.
Exactly right. That he's just doubling the size of his vacation home.
In fact, I think what's going on here is that the quadruple number comes when you count the stuff that's not actually house space, the expansion to the garage and porch space and other outdoor-indoor-y kind of areas.
Exactly right. Now, most Americans, when they get sick of their home, maybe they buy a new set of curtains or they just move into a fresh cardboard box. But if you're Mitt Romney, you just bulldoze it and build something bigger, 2 to 4 times bigger, depending, as you said, on whether or not you count the basement and garage as living space, which he does not, because how gauche would it be to live in a basement? Now, to be fair, Mr. Romney is tightening his belt like the rest of us have to. He's agreed to retain the, quote, existing lap pool and spa, unquote. Yeah,
what's
I know.
He living like
I
an
know.
Animal?
I know. That's right, America. Every time Mitt sinks his tired body into the same old obsolete spa, he'll be feeling your pain right before he uses the powerful water jets to massage it away. In other Mitt as man of the people news, he, or one of his manservants, has been tweeting images of Mitt doing poor people things like flying Southwest, eating Subway sandwiches, and brushing his own teeth.
No.
That's implausible.
No
sure,
way.
He's just like us.
So these photos are being tweeted by his campaign?
It's like, oh, here's Mitt eating a Subway sandwich. He kind of blew that because he ordered a caviar and truffle sub on platinum bread.
And you know what?
It's a $5,000 footlong.
He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to eat his own lunch. Rick Perry's doing that.
Exactly.
Oh. 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 Oh.
Well done.
Am I right?
Yeah.
People, right?
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. The National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. And Lumber Liquidators, providing hardwood flooring for the home handyman and professionals. Catalogs are available at 1-800-HARDWOOD. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
As public schools start the new year, principals, teachers, and parents find themselves adjusting to a new financial reality. Everything from class size to paper supplies to athletic teams. I'm Neil Conan. What's changed in your classroom and in your school? Email us, talk@npr.org, then join us. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Hearing voices.
And I'm a scissor sharpener, a knife sharpener.
This is my truck. This is my office. This is my workplace.
Working class. What we do for a living.
I work in construction, work at Burger King, I work in McDonald's. I tried everything.
The working class. This week on Hearing Voices.
Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday nights at 8 o'clock.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Support for our programming today comes from WPLN listener members And from Andrews Institute for Civic Leadership at Lipscomb University, offering a master's degree in civic leadership beginning October. Applications accepted through September 15th, leadingvoices.lipscomb.edu. It's 20 minutes after 11, 79 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Adam Felbert, Alonzo Bowden, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Travis.
Hi, Travis. How are you?
Good.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Decorah, Iowa, but I just got done spending the summer up in Ashland, Wisconsin.
Oh, really? What were you doing there?
I was camping and teaching swim lessons and lifeguarding.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Travis's topic?
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, wait. It's George from next door.
Heroes don't always wear tights or get profiled by Anderson Cooper. There are everyday heroes, quietly defending what's right, no matter what the cost, never getting the attention they deserve. That changes now for one of them. Our panelists are going to read you three stories from the week's news about an unsung American hero. Guess which story is true, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Of course.
All right. First, let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
At first, teachers at Wilson High School in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, thought the rustling sound they heard was just frisky teenagers on the first day of school. But then the janitor discovered the school had a new kid in class, a giant 4-pound Norway rat eating Lunchables in the cafeteria. The rat was trapped with the help of the girls' field hockey team and was on his way to permanent detention, if you know what I mean. But that's when the student chapter of PETA, Pupils to End Teacher Authority, got involved. Armed with flaming batons borrowed from the Spirit Squad, they liberated the rat. Actually, they kept him and named him Rodney. The ironically named Jonathan Orkin, no relation to the pest control people, led the student protest and also convinced fellow students to make Rodney their official mascot. And so next week, the Wilson Fighting Rats will take the field with cheerleaders wearing rat whiskers and naked tails yelling cheers like, chew 'em, gnaw 'em, toss 'em in a trap, says student Jonathan Orkin, rat liberator, quote, here's the funny thing, I'm glad I did it, but now that I've spent some time with him, he's actually pretty gross.
A rat gets rescued by being made the mascot of the high school where it lived. Your next story of someone leading by example comes from Adam Felber.
The Museum of Waste is a spacious, high-beam, 7-room house in Coral Flats, Florida, with tasteful decor and no exhibits. The house is the museum, and not because of its architecture, but because it is made completely of junk mail. 80-year-old retired contractor Jose Manuel de Castro said he got the idea 30 years ago and just began collecting rather than trashing or recycling the reams of paper that came to his door. By 87, he'd mulched and pressed his first actual plank, and last month finally completed the house. Quote, the furniture is mostly made of catalogs, he says, but the support beams are made of the tougher stuff, like fundraising letters and magazine blow-ins. De Castro says he used only what was brought to his door unsolicited. That extra stuff that comes with the Sunday New York Times was a bonanza, but my rule was that I could only use the ads, not the news. Though, he confesses, I sometimes threw in the Metro section. Boy, has that gone downhill. The Museum of Waste opened last month, but De Castro says business is slow so far. Maybe I ought to print up brochures, he says.
A man who converted his junk mail into an entire building. And lastly, let's hear a story of heroism and courage from Alonzo Bowden.
61-year-old refuses to wear Speedos. Normally, that would be cause for celebration, but not to the Nassau County Lifeguard Commission on Long Island. After 4 decades as a Nassau County lifeguard, Roy Lester was forced out of his job for not wearing a Speedo for his swim test. Quote, I wore a Speedo when I was in my 20s, Lester said, but come on, There should be a law prohibiting anyone over the age of 50 from wearing a Speedo. Most would say that law should cover anyone over 30, and over 60 would be a crime even in Europe. But Lester says that the Lifeguard Commission is using his principled refusal to smuggle his budgie on public beaches as an excuse to get rid of him and the other older lifeguards. Lester says that what he's wearing around his withered nether parts is irrelevant to his ability to do his job. Quote, "I could have passed that test in dungarees," unquote. Once the term dungarees was explained to the younger lifeguards, they were suitably impressed.
These are your three choices of a hero somewhere. Was it from Amy Dickinson, the school kid in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, who rescued a rat by electing it its school's new mascot? From Adam Felber, a man who took all that junk mail and instead of throwing it away made a whole museum out of it? Or from Alonzo Bowden, a lifeguard who refused to wear a Speedo at his golden age of 61? Which of these is the man who stood up for what was right?
Man. How disturbing it is, as a lifeguard, I think I am going to go with C.
You're going to go with C. You're going to choose a story about the lifeguard who refused to wear the Speedo. All right, well, we're very excited because we actually have this person on the line. So if I could ask you, please, to tell us who you are and what you did.
Sure, it's Roy Lester.
Yes.
And I was a lifeguard for 40 years at Jones Beach, New York.
Right. Roy, so you were the guy, of course, who was fired from your job as a lifeguard because you refused to wear a Speedo.
Yep.
Was it on behalf of the other lifeguards who were forced to wear these things or the people who have to look at you?
The other lifeguards, please.
And so let me just ask you, right now you're suing to get your job back, is that right?
That's right.
And what are you doing in the meantime?
Well, I'm an attorney.
Roy Lester is the man who refused to wear a Speedo and is, as far as we are concerned, a real American hero. Mr. Lester, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
And this, of course, means, Travis, that yes, you got it right. Congratulations. You earned a point for Alonzo for telling the truth.
Thank you,
You've
Travis.
Won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, they often call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. And now the game where we invite on experts to answer questions about things far outside their area of expertise. Until just last month, Austin Goolsbee was the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama White House. Before that, he was a member of the council, and before that, an advisor to the Obama presidential campaign. We expect him to either take the blame for the mess we're in or convincingly explain why he doesn't have to. Austin Goolsbee, welcome.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you. So you're a trained economist who is at the center of the councils of economic advisors in the White House. So our first question is, are we screwed?
No, but we're just slowly working our way out of it.
Really? Yeah. In kind of a spiral corkscrew motion, yeah. I would assume, from
yeah.
the screwing.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't want to be European at this moment. They are screwed. But
really?
Okay, yeah.
Is that what you told yourself in the White House war room in the depth of this current depression? Well, at least we aren't Belgians.
I think,
oh my God.
Morning.
Well, tell me what it was like. First of all, you know, you just left. How does it feel? I mean, did you enjoy your time in D.C.? You were there for a good 3 years.
Well, you know, I always said that I didn't go for the fun, and I wasn't disappointed.
Right.
Because it wasn't, you know, it was a strange moment, and there was a time when I was flying back on a flight to Midway, and we went through a terrible thunderstorm, and the flight is really bouncing around and horrible turbulence, and I don't get very nervous flying, but in the row, two rows ahead of me, there was an older woman on the aisle, and there was a young kid by the window, and as the plane is jerking around, the woman begins screaming, "We're gonna die!" And everyone looks around, and then, boom, it really jerks down, and the lights kind of go out on one side of the plane, and she continues screaming, "Oh, God, we're going to die!" So the people on the plane are looking, nobody's saying we're not going to die. Maybe we are going to die. So finally we land, and they come off, and she gets off, and she's very shaken. And so she was sitting next to this kid who's just staring out the window the whole time, like, "Oh, God, please don't." And so I say to that kid, I said, wow, that was some flight, huh? And the kid said, this is my first time on an airplane. Is it always like this? And I realized after 3 years in D.C., I was that kid.
Right.
I kept asking, is this normal? Is it always like this? But, I mean, it was a...
In that scenario, who was the person at the White House who kept screaming, we're all going to die?
It was Joe Biden. You can tell me, right?
It was me. I was just screaming, at least we're not European.
Yeah. No.
Let's talk about you. You're an economist, but you're also, we are told, you like improv comedy. You were once named America's funniest economist or Washington's funniest economist.
I was named D.C.'s funniest celebrity.
Whoa.
So the key in both of those is aim low.
You know? Yeah, I know. Did you ever try to like crack some jokes at the serious White House meetings?
Yes, I almost created a diplomatic incident at the OECD. When the
OECD,
that's the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, and it's in Paris, and the head of the CEA hosts the economic policy meeting of something, and it was a very serious moment. And I was trying to lighten it up, whatever. So they went around the room and they got in an argument about whether the publications of the OECD should be free, and the Secretary General said, well, actually, most of our budget comes from the sale of these blockbuster publications. And one of them was called Fit, Not Fat. And I think it was about teenage obesity or something. And he said, all the health ministers of the OECD got together. And I pushed my little button, which goes to all the trends, and I said, over lunch? There was dead silence. And then he looked. He said, no, they had a conference. I said, oh, well then carry on.
One last question before we go to the game. How does it feel to be one of the men that Salon.com named one of the 15 sexiest men of 2010?
I said at the time, I didn't even know Salon was printed in Braille.
Very good. You know. That may be the funniest thing a government economist has ever said in this show. Well, Austin Goolsbee, it's great to have you back in Chicago and also back on this show. We have asked you here to play a game that today we're calling
Soul Train.
It's the 40th anniversary of Soul Train, and since economists have no souls, we're going to ask them. It's not a job requirement. We're sure they just wither from disuse. We're going to ask you about the long-running music variety show Soul Train. Get at least two right, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's
Voice. I thought Carl was going to be that soccer guy.
Yeah. I know.
Then it went the other way.
We're adapting that skill of his to other uses. Carl, who's Austin Goolsbee playing for?
Austin is playing for Patty Keller of Westboro, Massachusetts.
All right, here we go. Westboro fans, I guess. First question, anyone who watched Soul Train for the last 15 years knows it ended with a host saying, we wish you love, peace, and soul. Thank you. But the sign-off used to be different. Which of these lines preceded the love, peace, and soul thing? A, and you can bet your last money, it's all going to be a stone gas honey. B, remember to spay and neuter your pets, but please don't do it yourself. Or C, so long, farewell, off Wiedersehen, adieu.
I'm going with C.
You're going to go with C, so long, farewell, off Wiedersehen, adieu. We wish you love, peace, and soul. Yeah. You guys, now wait a minute.
Come on, you want to go with A?
You guys, you gotta be cool here. Let him, you know. If he's going to screw this up too, then you got to let him.
Two?
Peter read that with such soul, I could see where you would be confused. It was so real.
Yes.
I'm still... All right, fine. I'm going with that.
You're
going
to go with that? You're right. It was that. And you can bet your last money it's all going to be a stone gas honey. We wish you love, peace, and soul. A longtime NPR listeners will remember back in the 70s, that's how Carl used to end his newscasts. All right, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. That was one for one. Let's go for
Stone
two.
Stone gas.
Stone gas, honey. Next question. Soul Train made a lasting impact on many stars of today, such as which of these? A, celebrity chef Emeril Lagasse, who serves a dish called Filet of Soul Train in his New Orleans restaurant. B, actor David Hasselhoff, who wrote to the show every day for 20 years in a failed attempt to get invited on. Or C, news anchor Nancy Grace, who says she plans to use what she learned from Soul Train to win the upcoming season of Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, God. You are aware I've been spending time thinking about the economy for the last year.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware.
Okay.
As I'm sure you know, in comedy circles, that's a setup. I'm professionally obligated to take a swing, but go on.
Okay. I'm going to go with Filet of... Oh, they want to see Nancy Grace? Is she even on Dancing
with
the
Stars? Is this how you make decisions? Is this how you make decisions in the White House? You go out to the line for the tour and go, what do you guys think? Interest rates? Stimulus? What? Come on, get it to sign.
So Nancy Grace is going to be on Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. So there's a lot of talk about that. Where is little Kaylee?
All right,
Kaylee?
Fine. I'm going to go with that.
You going to go with this? You going to go with Nancy Grace?
Yes.
You're right. It was Nancy Grace.
Another example.
All right.
Another example of soul personified. Nancy Grace.
Yeah. Nancy Grace.
Now that's cool right there. Huh?
Last question. Let's see if you can go perfect here. Last question. Soul Train has always had an inclusive vibe, welcoming figures you might not expect, such as which of these? A, Vladimir Putin, who debuted a dance move he calls the Putin Putin. B, an actual train. Or C, Wolf Blitzer.
Oh, wow. It's got to be an actual train.
It's going to go for the actual train? That'd be great. Well,
because I know
Soul
Wolf
train.
Blitzer.
You know Wolf Blitzer?
I know Wolf, and
no way
it might be true, but that would really surprise me.
Be amazed. It was Wolf Blitzer.
It really was. No.
Wolf Blitzer was inexplicably...
Did he do the scramble board?
I did not see that coming.
He was invited to be a presenter at the 2010 Soul Train Awards, where he learned to do the Dougie. This inspired Blitzer's recent failed attempt to create CNN's Soul-tuation Room. Carl, how did Austin Goolsbee do on our show?
He had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Patty Keller.
Congratulations.
Well done.
Okay. Feel good about yourself? Austin Goolsbee is a former White House economic advisor. He's now in the faculty at the University of Chicago. Austin Goolsbee, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, guys.
Great to see you. Austin Goolsbee, ladies and gentlemen. In just a minute, Carl gets his hair done in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals, from physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at angieslist.com. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And eSurance, offering tools to help customers track car repairs online or with a smartphone. eSurance, car insurance at eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Iowa is looking to save money by replacing job counselors with computer workstations for the unemployed. Will a computer be able to help you write a resume? Also, the voice of the working man, America's poet laureate, Philip Levine. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
I'm Krista Tippett. Next time on Being, we reflect on the human effects of the digital objects that are transforming our lives. Sherry Turkle directs the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self, and she insists that we can shape technology to human purposes. This is part of the Civil Conversations Project, Ideas and Tools for Healing Our Fractured Civic Spaces. That's from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Support for our programming comes from Andrews Institute for Civic Leadership at Lipscomb University, offering a master's degree in civic leadership beginning October. Applications accepted through September 15th, leadingvoices.lipscomb.edu. And support comes from WPLN listener members. You can become a member or renew your membership online anytime at WPLN.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Alonzo Bowden, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl prepares for his famous Labor Day rhyme-bacue. We're not even trying anymore. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Alonzo, victorious Libyan rebels took over Muammar Gaddafi's personal compound after the dictator fled and found something rather odd, a photo album devoted to whom?
Well, I can't even speak about news since Kim Kardashian got married. I've stopped reading anything else. What would Gaddafi have a photo album of?
Well, it was an album of someone he had admired greatly, apparently. It was somebody who had come for a visit.
Hillary?
No, not Hillary. Her predecessor.
Condi?
Condi Rice, yes.
Condi? Wait a minute. Nobody.
Condoleezza Rice. Muammar Gaddafi's infatuation with the former Secretary of State was no secret back when they both had jobs in government. Mr. Gaddafi used to call her, quote, my African queen. And he once said, quote, I admire and am very proud of the way she leans back and gives orders to the Arab leaders. Liza, 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 I love her very much, unquote. Still, the photo album filled with pictures of Ms. Rice was a little creepy, especially because all over its cover you found the words written with pen, Mr. Muammar Rice. About 20 times.
Mm-hmm. In his, like, glitter pen.
Yeah, yeah. There was also
amazing how many different ways he was able to spell rice.
I know. It's just his habit.
So has she said anything about this?
Well, actually, she was asked for comment. She teaches at Stanford now, Ms. Rice does. She really shuddered audibly. You can imagine why. Good news. Good is like, good news, you have a secret admirer. Bad news, it's Muammar Gaddafi. But although the rebels who are now searching for the dictator around Libya, they might want to check out her classroom at Stanford and see if there are any like new students wearing sunglasses, a mustache,
epaulettes,
and a Stanford T-shirt with gold epaulettes. You know? Amy, as the U.S. presence in Afghanistan continues, military leaders are doing their best to encourage a good relationship between our soldiers and the locals. To that end, Marine commanders just instituted a ban on Marines doing what?
Banning...
it's a politeness issue, apparently.
Banning
the
U.S.
Afghans,
are spitting. No, because they do that.
Yeah, the Afghans find this very offensive, apparently.
Shaking hands?
No, I'll give you a hint. Apparently, there is no phrase in Pashtun that means pull my finger.
No.
Yes.
I can't say that.
We're listening.
Just make a sound.
How can you ban that? How do you ban that?
What the... I will give it to you in respect to your ladylike demureness. But I will say that what has happened is the Marine commanders have asked their troops to refrain from farting out loud. The out loud part that is important. Military leaders say it offends Afghans. And to give you a sense for how offensive this is for Afghans, that's banned, but actual bombs, okay. Part of a wider campaign of cultural sensitivity in Afghanistan. Soldiers should note silent farts are still allowed under the military's controversial don't ask, don't smell policy. Yes.
Oh, boy.
You know, you think Marine training is tough enough. This might be the one that pushes a few of them over the edge.
Yeah. Really? Actually, there was... It may be true that this was posted on a military magazine website, and the comments from Marines were like, you have got to be kidding me. Some of them said, this is the only fun we get to have in Afghanistan. Alonzo, this week an op-ed in the New York Times lamented that college just ain't what it used to be, that today's kids are denied an opportunity we all had in school to have what?
Well, they're denied so many things. A future would be one.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. No more will freshmen experience the thrill of someone borrowing their clothes without asking, or inviting their date up to the top bunk, or...
Roommate? No, not roommates.
Well, it's kind of roommate.
Random roommate?
Sinra, I'll give you... But the answer specifically is the opportunity to have a crazy roommate. That's what we're missing, these kids these days, because...
What, did they ban crazy?
What happened was...
Wait a minute. Now, what sort of institutions of higher learning are we running when crazy isn't welcome, huh?
It's not that.
I'm
it's that
shocked
in the old days,
this.
You know, back when you and I went to school, they used to throw you in with anybody, and they all turned out... Some of them turned out to
that's
be
what
nuts.
I'm saying, the random thing.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
You could get
they're not
anybody.
Doing the random thing anymore. Now a lot of colleges have these roommate websites you can go and vet your future roommates, pick the ones you want.
Oh, so, I'm sure that will be as reliable as, say, internet dating.
Exactly. And if you're thinking, what are they talking about? If you're listening to this, you're thinking, what are they talking about? I did not have a weird roommate in college. You were the weird roommate. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Lil Johnson.
Hey, where are you calling from, Lil?
Menlo Park, California.
Oh, in the beautiful Silicon Valley, right?
It really is.
And what do you do there?
I'm a stay-at-home mom,
right.
In transition, actually.
You're transitioning to occasionally leaving the house? What are you doing?
Yeah, pretty much. Just got my youngest off to college last week and trying to figure out what to do with the rest of my life.
Congratulations. I would suggest first a nap.
Yeah, a really long one.
Well, welcome to the show. Now, Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I am.
Here's your first limerick.
Generations of Britons agree... The bergamot essence is key. It appears, though, that Twinings attempts some refining and changed its divine Earl Grey
tea.
Yes, for centuries, Twinings Earl Grey tea has tasted exactly the same, like old people. But Twinings has now introduced a new Earl Grey, jazzed up with, quote, a dash of lemon and a touch more bergamot. So the British are doing what they do best, which is to complain impotently.
The Earl himself would be rolling over in his grave.
All right, here is your next limerick.
My baby wear seems really hyper, especially where odors grow riper. Because mother's passion is cutting-edge fashion, I'm wearing an haute couture
diaper.
Yes, diaper, very good. Yes, let it go. After the booming success of the faux denim diaper and diapers with floral and argyle prints, Huggies is joining the industry-wide move toward designer diapers with their new limited edition camouflage diapers. These diapers are ideal for babies who want to blend in on the battlefield. Designer diapers can cost up to 20% more than normal diapers, even though they all look the same in the inside eventually. Here is your last limerick.
I spent hours getting frizz to lay flat. There's no time for the old yoga mat. I can't hit the gym because my bangs need a trim. My haircut is making me...
fat?
Yes. Your hair could be making you fat, at least according to the U.S. Surgeon General. She claims that many Americans, mostly women, spend so much time and money styling their hair that they don't exercise for fear of messing it up. One possible solution, open salons inside gyms. You could sit on the stationary bike, get a perm. Or perhaps more realistically, you could just ask your barber to style your hair so it falls down around your neck and covers your chins.
that's just an opinion.
That was totally bizarre, though.
You think? You think this is uncalled for?
I mean, the Surgeon General, like, doesn't she have better stuff to do than...
Apparently not.
You would think that one day the Surgeon General would say, look, I give up. We're fat.
Yeah.
We're just fat. We're just going to go with that from here forward.
I have to go back to the actual... She just made that up, right?
No. Apparently, this is actually some...
It's a university study that, yeah.
Said that a lot of women don't want to work out because they spend so much time in their hair.
I'm just guessing this Surgeon General has never visited L.A.
Nor a gym.
Because they definitely have time for both in L.A. They're not a lot of time for reading.
No.
But... And after that joke, I cannot go home.
Yeah. Carl, how did Lil do in our quiz?
Lil had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Lil, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations, Lil. Thank you. Thanks for playing, Lil.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye, Peter.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Alonzo Bowden and Adam Felber each has 3 points. Amy Dickinson has 2.
Wow.
All right.
Then.
So, Amy, you're in third place. So, we are going to begin with you. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. The National Guard airlifted food and water to towns in blank stranded by the hurricane.
Vermont.
Yes. ExxonMobil reached a deal this week allowing them to access blank in the Russian Arctic.
Oil.
Right. After a cache of uncensored State Department cables was accidentally released online, the group blank actually blamed the Guardian newspaper.
WikiLeaks.
Right. Maya Angelou said this week that a paraphrased quote on the blank memorial makes him seem like a, quote, arrogant twit.
Martin Luther King.
Right. A central Pennsylvania man has been arrested for the second time for the crime of blanking.
Does it involve donuts?
No, it's trying to steal a rack of ribs by stuffing them in his pants.
Oh.
Tennis player blank withdrew from the U.S. Open, citing an autoimmune disease.
Serena Williams?
No, it's actually Venus. Venus, sorry. Once again, an Apple employee accidentally left a prototype of the new blank at a bar.
The iPhone.
Right. 2 British police officers accidentally enabled a drug offender to break his court-imposed curfew by blanking.
They enabled him to break his curfew by getting high with him?
No.
No.
By putting the ankle bracelet monitor on his artificial leg. Court-ordered curfew isn't really that bad, but you can just leave your ankle monitor at home.
With your ankle.
With your ankle.
With
Christopher
your ankle.
Locock put a bandage on his false leg to fool the security team into thinking it was his real one. Locock and security staffers are in trouble, but the leg was praised for its spotless record. Stay quietly at home.
Oh. Lindsay Lohan's not aware of this scam.
No,
no.
Right.
Carl, how well did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points, and Amy has taken the lead.
Well done. We have flipped a coin, and Alonzo has elected to go next. So, here we go. Fill in the blank. Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell were among those who criticized the new book out this week by blank.
Dick Cheney.
Right. New research released this week shows the risk of cardiovascular disease could be reduced by 1/3 by eating blank.
Whew.
Human hearts. No, chocolate.
I was about to say human hearts.
I could tell. A man on trial for a crime in Florida did not help his case when he listed his occupation as blank.
Criminal?
Right. During her appearance at the MTV Video Music Awards, Beyoncé stole the show by announcing she is blank.
Pregnant.
Right. Lucasfilms riled fans again by announcing more changes in the upcoming Blu-ray release of the blank movies.
Star Wars.
Right. An Arkansas man taking aerial photos of his house during a plane trip noticed blank.
A burglar?
He noticed 2 men breaking in and stealing his stuff. It all ended well. The men were caught, but the people on the left side of the plane were disappointed to hear the pilot announce, those of you on the right side of the plane have a terrific view of a robbery in progress. Carl, how did Alonzo do in our quiz?
Alonzo had 5 correct answers, 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Alonzo has taken the lead.
All right, then. So how many questions right, then, does Adam need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Here we go, Adam. This is for the game. U.S. officials announced this week that a drone strike killed the number 2 leader of blank.
Al-Qaeda.
Right. After a botched gun tracking operation, the head of the blank was demoted this week.
ATF?
Yes. On Wednesday, the Department of Justice blocked the proposed merger between T-Mobile and blank.
AT&T.
Right. In the wake of the earthquake and hurricane, inspectors found several previously undiscovered cracks in the blank.
Washington Monument.
Right. Police received a call about a man in a clown outfit driving a golf cart all drunk, but when they arrested him, they realized blank.
He was, in fact, a licensed clown.
No.
Sorry, sir. Carry on. It says drunk clown on your license.
No, he wasn't a clown. Those were just his golf clothes.
Oh.
No!
Yes.
That's awesome.
Chaz Bono was among the celebrities chosen to perform this season on the TV series blank.
Dancing with the Stars.
Right. Domino's Pizza says it wants to be the first company to open a restaurant on blank.
To the moon!
Yes. Scientists have discovered a 300-year-old medical journal that says that teens can clear up acne by blanking.
Necking.
No, by drinking alcohol.
Reasonable.
It still works. The handwritten manuscript found in England advises teens to take of wine 3 drams every day, along with a dash of brimstone, really. Teens immediately hailed the advice as genius. And Seagram's and Clearasil have joined forces to create the first ever wine cooler with benzoyl peroxide. Carl, did Adam do well enough to win?
He needed 6 correct answers to win outright. He had 6 correct answers. So it's 15 points. Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict, now that they've ironed out the details of when he can deliver it, what will be the big news out of President Obama's job speech. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and to the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to help reverse the childhood obesity epidemic at rwjf.org. And the Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotika writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. And this week we send our summer intern, Amy Solomon, back to college. We shall miss her enthusiasm and smarts and willingness to laugh at the lamest jokes, especially mine. And we hope she succeeds in her life goal, becoming a stand-up comedian. Thanks for everything, Amy. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the big news out of the president's job speech? Alonzo Bowden.
Well, the number one job he's trying to save will be his own.
Amy Dickinson.
Well, the unemployment rate is so depressing, they decided to rename it. So from now on, it's going to be known as the National Family Powdered Milk Sharing Percentage.
And Adam Felber.
Well, it's a little technical, but stay with me, Peter. We're going to attract employers by changing the signs at all the airports to read, Welcome to China.
And if the president says any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks to Adam Felber, Amy Dickinson, and Alonzo Bowden. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
Hi there, I'm Gian Gomeshi. Jane Fonda is an Oscar-winning actress, a writer, a political activist, fashion icon, and fitness guru. In her new book, Primetime, she shares her wisdom on living out life's third act, a feature chat with Jane Fonda, coming up on Cue from PRI, Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock.
Nashville weather for this afternoon, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 1 o'clock with mostly cloudy skies, high in the mid-80s. Right now, overcast skies over Nashville. It's 70.